When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Age of Radio.
I mean, it's definitely not my dick, but like it's one of those things.
I know
where
it's
like,
not your Jay. I know it's not your dick. I've seen your.
You're like, Lauren, is this Jay's dick?
No, I mean no. I was like, I know it's not your dick because I've seen your dick through little gold shorts that you wore to fucking Broken Gawa, and I know.
There's no way you can see my dick in that fucking shorts.
I got a gauge for size, buddy. I got a gauge for size.
First of all, all right. Two things.
This is all going at the end of the show, by the way.
Those shorts had zero flexibility, so it was like smashed on her.
I've also seen you in Speedos. I've also seen you in bike shorts. There's nothing below your waist to impress.
It's the same thing. Actually, maybe there's three things.
Jim, that's... Calm down. I'm not saying you're small.
I'm a grower, not a shower.
Are you trying to make me think you have a big dick? Does it matter if you're friend? I don't care if you have a big dick or not. It doesn't matter to me.
And three, I will be the first one to admit, I do not have large balls. Like, they're just there. They don't hang.
Jay, no one cares about the size of your dick. Most women don't even care about the size of your dick. They care that it works and that you use it well. And that's it.
I know.
But I'm just saying, I've seen your bulge. It doesn't impress anybody.
I know.
So that dick pic that we got in our
email. I'm aware.
I knew that it wasn't you because
that dick pic is hard.
Because that was impressive and yours isn't.
Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. Let's start the show.
Welcome to Super Movie Bros. I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Dave.
I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Jay.
We got a fun fucking show for you guys. You know what? Me and Jay got our free guy review. It's a week late, sure. But I've actually been extremely under the weather recently, so we had to record late in the week. I thought I had COVID. I was like, I've been vaccinated, but like, you know, Delta variant is out there, and I wear a mask still when I go out, but like... I felt like flu-y. I felt like feverish. I had congestion, which isn't actually a symptom of COVID, I found out. But I did have like that tightness in the chest and like raspiness and stuff like that. So I got a 6-month-old baby at the house, you know? If I have it, I gotta know because I'll be honest with you guys,
Of course you do.
I'm all over that baby. I love that baby. Me and him have a ton of fun together. So
I would hope so, Dave. You're kind of stuck with him for life.
Yeah, I know.
You know.
And then also, like, my daughter comes here all the time, and like, she's all over me when she's here. We spend, like, every minute of
the day together. And then when I'm over, so I'm all over you.
You're never here.
I know.
You're not allowed over anymore.
I've been shunned.
Not until we get the new dog. We're also dog hunting.
So instead of you, I'm going out with your sister to get my fix.
Exactly.
The family fix.
She taught me everything that is me. Everything I am comes from my sister. Kim,
she's so cool. She's a great girl.
But we're also like dog hunting right now. Like not dog shopping because we're adopting them. So we're hunting them. We're going to like the dog that we want. We're going to tell the rescue, just release it into the woods, and I'll bag the bitch and bring her home. but we got to get a girl dog, and we're looking for like not a specific breed, but a specific temperament of dog.
Something that can handle a husky.
Something that is high energy enough to handle a husky. Not as big as a husky, but can still handle, you know.
It doesn't quite shed as much.
It doesn't quite shed as much. So we're looking somewhere in the Aussie Shepherd or Aussie Cattle Dog.
I'm so excited. This is like a new child to me, too. Like my
yeah,
family.
So, and Luca is like 10 years old now. And
oh, my
he
God.
Has,
oh, he don't has, say that.
Like, I don't mean like, when I say declining, I don't mean health-wise. But like in play and like energy, he's declined a little bit, and he's fucking needy. He's so fucking needy anymore. And it's all because he doesn't have a little buddy. You know what I mean? He always had baby around, and even though they didn't interact that much, just having something else with him during the day, something of closeness to him, gave him comfort. But now, like, when we go out, we have the camera in the house, and the camera will tell us, like, motion detected. And me and Lauren will be out, and I'll check the camera. And all you see, I should actually play the audio right here if I can find one of them, is Luca, like, in the middle of the living room, and he lets out the loudest, most sad, gut-wrenching call. Because when huskies and wolves howl, they're howling and they're waiting for a response, because it's going to tell them where the rest of their pack is. It's going to help them like locate how far they are from their loved ones. So he lets out this long howl, and when he doesn't hear a response, he goes into the next big room and does it again, and to the next big room and does it again. So, and then he'll go and jump back into the window and wait for us again. And it's like the saddest thing to watch. And I know just having a friend at home, like having another dog at home, would be good for him. So, it also, there's just tons of research that shows that a younger dog.
See, I think he's howling for me. He's not.
But like a younger dog helps keep an older dog young.
Sure.
You know, keeps them active and stuff like that. So it helps their longevity and improves their quality of life. So essentially, we are looking for a pet for Luca. We're looking at another pet for us, but it's mainly a pet for Luca. So, but I gotta tell you, man, the application process is fucking rigorous. Like, we are filling out a ton of like information on these applications. Like, yeah, we need to give them like the past 10 years of our vet records and stuff like that, so they can so we can show that we've taken care of our dogs in over time and stuff like that. I have to give them references. Jay, you're a reference, so you may get a phone call from a shelter asking what type of dog people we are. So remember, when people ask you questions, only ever answer the question that's being asked. Don't offer up any other information. That's just.
Because then sounds like you're lying or you're bullshitting.
That's just a guy with a forensic psychology degree who used to teach people how to interrogate people. So, just saying. When you're asked a question, never offer up any more information than answering the question that was asked. So, anyway, that's what I've been doing. That's why we're recording late. And that's why we didn't get our Free Guy review out sooner. So, we're going to have Free Guy review. That's going to be at the end of the show. There will be spoiler free and then spoiler review. Don't expect like a big deep dive into like spoilers and stuff like that. That'll just be more of like a free form conversation about how we feel about the show, about the movie. And then, of course, we will be doing What Are You Watching? And then we'll also have a brief trailer park for the final Eternals trailer. But Jay, before we jump into all of that, we got to get into this week's fact.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
It's the search for fact, not truth.
All right, so this fact comes from Michael Gary. He emailed us to the Super Movie Bros podcast at gmail.com email, and he informed us that Matt Damon was actually originally sought out by James Cameron to play Sully in Avatar, and for salary, he was offered, Jay, are you ready for this? 10% of the film's profit over its lifetime.
I actually knew that.
And Matt Damon.
Well, I only knew it for a week or so. So I give him credit. This is a new thing in the news. It just came out.
So he was doing an interview.
He's promoting Stillwater all over the place. So yeah. That came out, and he had a good chuckle about it.
So Matt Damon was offered 10%
of the highest grossing movie of all time.
Of the highest grossing movie of all time. And he turned it down.
And you can see him in the role, too. You can see him in that role and killing it way more than Sam Worthington, obviously.
What? What an idiot.
Oh, what a loser.
And the best part is, you know, Sam Worthington's like, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah, because he got paid like a million.
I got paid daily rate. I got paid SAG. I got paid SAG daily rate.
He literally was like a nobody actor in Australia. Literally.
So I love that fact. So thanks, Michael Gary, for sending that. And the other thing that you sent along with that fact, you know what you sent.
Yeah, well, I'm a little envious because I didn't get it. The fuck.
I'll send it to you. I won't mention it on the show because I don't want to get a string of these. But
yeah, we'll have a collage on the wall.
No, see, because literally guys, he sent us a dick pic. Okay,
thank you.
And
say it, just say it.
He sent us a dick pic, and like the thing that I was
getting.
You don't
know whose dick, you know, it could be anybody's.
So like the thing I asked him was like, hey man, like, you know. Don't care, but like, did we in one episode ask for this? Because it very much seems like that's something me and you would ask for in an episode. We'd be like, yeah, sure, send us your dick pics. Why not?
Nobody knows that they saw it, but they did.
Nice big cock.
Why not?
I mean, I wouldn't put it past this.
That's what I mean. I don't know. This could have been 22. This could have been 200-300 episodes ago that we asked for dick pics, and someone's just listening back and just being like, you know what? All right, guys. All right. There it is. Unleashes Kraken. And Michael Gary, let me tell you, don't know why you sent us a dick pic, but you have a Kraken, me friend. So that's this week's fact. I love that fact. It's I love seeing people who are like Matt Damon, who are like that rich, that famous, like being able to look back on a mistake they made and just being like, that was a fucking bonehead move, because that humanizes them. It takes them down off their pedestal a little bit. All right, Jay, now that we've gotten fact out of the way, let's get ourselves into this week's trailer park. We're just going to talk briefly about Eternals final trailer.
Cut the beat and let the music play. No trailer park. Shout out to Dave and Jay. I don't surf, but there's a newer wave. We've been on since Twitch, God save the right stop. I don't wanna flow until I know that the bass drop.
All right, so this new Eternals trailer kind of starts off in a way that I like. You know, it's bringing things into the Marvel universe in a way that is very like post Thanos, very post Endgame.
5 years ago, Thanos erased half of the population of the universe. But the people of this planet brought everyone back with a snap of a finger. The sudden return of the population provided the necessary energy for the emergence to begin.
How long do we have?
7 days.
We're Eternals. We came here 7,000 years ago to protect humans from the deviants.
Why didn't you guys help fight Thanos? Or any war, all the other terrible things throughout history?
We were instructed not to interfere in any human conflicts unless deviants are involved.
By who? We need to find the others.
Ajax, Selma Hayek, is talking to Icarus, who is played by Rob Madden, and she is basically talking about the fact that the people of Earth, these people who they have sworn to protect from the deviants, but they will not interfere in any other affairs of humans, basically saved the entire universe by defeating Thanos with one snap of their finger. But the energy released from that snap was enough to awaken something inside the Earth, which is what the Eternals are now all going to have to band together to basically stop. And obviously, I think in the center of the Earth will be a celestial, but it's really about Ajax and Icarus getting the band back together.
I also do think there, it's going to have some type of thread for the next phase.
Oh, 100%.
Sure.
I think so too. I think this is going to fit in with a lot of that. Remember, things are going to be getting very, very not to make a joke, but very internal, but also very like external with like multiple universes and stuff like that. Everything's going to get a whole lot more galactic. It's going to get a whole lot more sci-fi-y,
Star Trek-y.
Star Trek-y. Yeah, it's a good way to put it. Things are going to get weird from here on out. But we do get our first look at the Deviants, which seem to be, you know, like I talked about in our last Trailer Park breakdown, there were the Eternals that were made by the Celestials, but there were also the Deviants. And the Deviants exist on Earth in the same way that the Eternals do. And they've been there for 7,000 years. So if you want to think of the Deviants as something, think of them as demons from legend or creatures of legend, because the one we see coming out of the water very much looks like a water monster, and it sprouts wings, and then all of a sudden I'm like, it's kind of like a Pegasus, right? So like the Deviants are kind of just like these evil entities that are hell-bent on murder and mass destruction, and they're usually creatures and stuff like that. But now they're starting to rise too, with the rise in the energy, and whatever is in the center of the Earth is rising. Now they are attacking humanity, and the Eternals again are going to have to put the band back together, even though most of them have no memory that they've been on Earth for 7,000 years and have no clue what being part of this band really means. Which I find interesting. But we do get some great shots of the Celestials in this. But I think, like, ultimately, like, my big takeaway from this is this movie looks fucking gorgeous. Like, I made fun of Jay a whole lot during his Green Knight review, where I'm talking about, like, sweeping landscape shots that show just epic scale. That's Eternals. Like, there are sweeping landscape shots here.
Yeah,
show, you know, epic scale, and it looks fucking pretty as shit.
And I wouldn't expect anything less after seeing No Man's Land, with this kind of budget in her hands. Woo, baby. She pretty much put, like, it's phenomenal. It really is phenomenal, and I think one of the great things about this is going to be character driven.
Now
you're
going
to be heavily.
Wasn't Chloe Zhao the director of this movie? That's who Jay's talking about. She was signed on to do this before she even did Nomadland, right?
No, but she was signed on before it was released.
Before it was released, okay. So before she was famous, before she had an Academy Award.
Yeah, but of course, you know, in the industry, they already see early cuts. They know what they got going on. They already knew Nomadland was a hit.
We also get to see like kind of like small versions of like everyone's powers a little bit, which I really like seeing. I like seeing their technology.
I did too. And you're going to see more of that. I think what's one of those things where like you could tell it's going to be a long movie, and I think it's going to be really character driven, with the effects being really pretty well pointed and seamless within a real ground of reality. However, like I think we're going to allude to the
shot where the villain
has their face,
Angelina Jolie tied up, the face. It's the only thing CGI in this trailer where I'm like, it doesn't work. It reminded me of the first Justice League. Yeah.
Where like it reminds you of Steppenwolf. Like a fucking, yeah, Steppenwolf. Oh my God.
Yeah.
However, maybe they'll clean it up. I don't know. Maybe there's going to be some kind of blowback from that. Who knows? I don't know. But
I like this. I like this idea because like a lot of what's going on in this trailer seems very dour. It seems like you know, these characters are in dire straits. They're fighting for their life.
It sounds more grounded. Not so much dour. It's more grounded. It seems more like sense and reality.
But
correct.
There is that levity to it, right? Like there, we get the end moment where Rob Madden's Icarus kind of hits the table and goes, "What's this, vibranium?" And it snaps in half and it falls. He goes, "No, it's fall collection from IKEA." it's a nice little chuckle, but it won't like overshadow the heaviness of what's going on here. So I like it. I think it looks gorgeous. This trailer, like we talked about in the last trailer park breakdown for the Eternals, where I said, I'm not seeing what Kevin Feige is touting. Kevin Feige was touting that this will be a Best Picture nominee.
Right. Yeah,
contender.
You were not sold in that first
I was not sold in that first trailer for that. Watching this, I went, I don't know. First, I don't know if this would ever be nominated for Best Picture. However, I can see now what Feige was talking about.
A sense of what he was talking about.
Right.
I must say it enhanced it for me, and then it was like two steps forward, one step back kind of thing when I saw the face of the villain. So that, honestly, that is too strong of a thing that will bring me back and pull me back from it. So as long as they either freshen that look up a little bit better or don't show him too often close up, so where it takes me out of it, where it looks too cartoonish, I'm all in, because I thought everything else looked fantastic. All the other special effects looked fantastic.
Absolutely. So that's it. Like I said, we weren't going to be going long on this one, but Eternals will be getting its current tentative release date. I say tentative because even though Disney's keeping hard on their release dates, it seems like things might move given what's going on in the world right now. But November 5th, 2021. The latest rumor is like that Sony is moving all of their movies that are slated for 2021 release and just taking them over to 2022 and waiting and seeing what happens. So
Sony's always been a little bit more of a wild card in that
right.
way.
Venom's been delayed again, and it seems like Sony might be waiting and delaying things even further, because it kind of, you know, to be fair, there's been like 3 weeks where like big movies have come out and they're not performing in the way studios would want. Free Guy, which we'll be reviewing, isn't performing the way that a big studio would want it to perform. The Suicide Squad
even in pandemic terms. So
Jungle Cruise came out and it's not performing the way that you would want it to see. So if you're another big studio with big movies on your slate and you're seeing that and you're like $36 million on an opening weekend for a movie that cost us $300 million to make, the juice ain't worth the squeeze, baby. Let's wait till 2022. Let's hope this Delta variant goes away.
Disney not. And Warner Brothers seems to be having the biggest properties under the belt.
Which are the two that are also pissing other studios off by doing their release the way they're doing them, which is half streaming service, half
some
theater.
Some stuff. Shang-Chi is not.
Theaters. We'll see. Free Guy for opening now. The way that it opened, Shang-Chi might quickly become a premier access.
Yeah, but it's coming out in 2 weeks. They better do something quick.
Joe, we already talked about this last time when we did the Suicide Squad, that we know that a lot of companies are essentially giving a mulligan to this year, to put it in a golf term that you would understand. And they're just like, they're taking critical and audience scores more seriously than they have in the past. They're not looking at box office as heavily as they've done. They're just looking for what people liked. And if people liked it now, hopefully they'll like it in 2 to 3 years when we put a sequel out and the theater is a healthier system. Or we have a whole new system and everything is coming to streaming day and date as it's released in the theaters and you can choose where you watch it. And I like that idea because I would 100% choose to watch it at home. I got the TV. I got the sound system. I got it all set up. I can do it any way I want. I could be just as happy watching it there. However, Dune is like that movie. It's like that movie that's out there where I'm like, man,
I'm buying you a ticket for the theater. You're going to the theater with me. Shut up.
That's fine. But I'm bringing. He'll be 9 months old at that point. But I'm bringing a 9 month old with me. You ready for that, Jay? Are you ready to be that guy?
No, you're not.
Are you ready for me and you to be that couple in the theater?
No, I'm not going to ruin everybody's experience by bringing a 9 month year old baby to the fucking theaters.
Then don't take me. Just come over and watch it with me after you see it in the theaters on HBO Max at home.
I'll watch it in theaters first.
There you go. That's what I said. After you watch it in the theaters. But, Jay, that's going to do it for our trailer park breakdown. So, thanks, Thomas Iannucci, for always lending us a bit of your music.
Love
to
you,
use
buddy.
For that. And then, of course, you guys can check out Thomas Iannucci's music over on Spotify. It's Thomas Iannucci, IANNUCCI. You can check it out over there. He's got a new album that's dropping soon. Follow him on Instagram and Twitter. It's Thomas Iannucci over there. And he's got some teasers and stuff for what he's got going on over there. All right, Jay, let's get into what are you watching?
What are you watching?
What are we watching?
He's trying to watch some illegal channel.
Oh, he's watching.
No, go past this part. In fact, never play this again.
All right, Jay, since I got down to watching some new stuff, I'm going to get started with me. For once, it's all about me. It's gonna be me.
It's gonna
so,
be me.
So, starting off my what are you watching this week? I watched Titans season 3. So, on HBO Max, Titans has now moved from the DC Universe app and is now on HBO Max. And season 3 kicked off last week with.
Is What If on Disney Plus?
What If's on Disney Plus, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Titans is on HBO Max. I said HBO
Max. But it was Disney Plus.
No, it was DC Universe app, I said.
Oh, sorry.
It's all right. That's all right. It's a defunct app. You know, it would hold no interest to you whatsoever. But anyway, so they released the first three episodes of season 3. And I got to tell you, as a fan of the show, the episode 3 left me heartbroken. Just fucking gut punched. And both me and Lauren were shocked at the end of it. If you're a fan of Titans and you haven't started watching it on HBO Max, now's the time because the first, by the time you hear this, four episodes are out now. And I think so far, best season yet? Question mark. I sound like Amelia Clark when she was doing the interview for Game of Thrones season 8 and she goes, best season ever. And you can hear that question mark at the end. But no, I mean, so far, I'm impressed with the season. I like where all the main characters are. However, this season, as you'll see in the promo material, does involve Red Hood, which obviously, if you're a comic book fan, is Jason Todd. And it just the transition from Robin to death to resurrection as Red Hood, it's just happening way too quickly. Just immensely too quickly for the show. The show does do a terrible job of timeline of like how long has it been since Jason died? How long has it been since Bruce Wayne's been missing? How long has it been since the Titans have been in Gotham? We don't know. They kind of like allude to the fact that it's been a little bit, but then they say like something like, "Well, this happened last night," and it's like, "Well, I kind of thought that was a couple of weeks, or maybe months ago." I don't know. So it feels like just events are happening too fast, and almost like the producers are like, Red Hood's a hot button item. Let's get him on the show. And it's like, oh, I don't think we've earned that turn yet. And they're like, it doesn't matter. People like it. So just put it on there. Who cares if our story has earned it or not? That's a downside to me. Other than that, I'm really enjoying, obviously, Dick Grayson and where they have his character and the rest of the Titans characters and how they're interacting with this situation, even though I don't quite buy the villain of Red Hood being where he is now. That all aside, I still recommend Titans. I don't recommend it as highly as I recommend Doom Patrol. Like, if you had to choose, like, you have two babies, only one can live. One's named Titans, the other one's named Doom Patrol. And you had to throw one of them in a wood chipper, just throw Titans in the wood chipper and watch Doom Patrol. If you got the time to watch both, though, watch both. And also, start watching that Harley Quinn cartoon that is on HBO Max now that was moved over from the DC Universe app. It's R-rated. It's fucking hilarious. And I fucking absolutely love every minute of that. I just started rewatching seasons 1 and 2 of that. So, Jay, what did you get down to watching this week?
I actually saw Coda from Apple. And this was a big hit from Sundance.
Could you tell I was talking about, by the way, could you tell I was talking about superheroes? Because Jay didn't say a fucking word.
She gave me a bunch of crap about me not listening to her enough or something. I don't know. I wasn't really paying attention.
Yeah. Well, it's not my thing.
It's not your thing.
I let you ramble.
It's not your thing. Yeah, it's not your thing. No. But you watched, so you watched Coda, Apple TV Plus.
Yep. Yep, this is an Apple original film. They picked this up from Sundance Film Festival. Coda is short for Child of Deaf Adults. And this is a gorgeous film that follows Ruby. She's the only hearing person in her deaf family. Yeah. She's got deaf parents and a deaf brother, yeah. And she's the only one that has hearing. And she is, you know, pretty much the crutch between the world of the hearing and the deaf.
I actually watched this movie.
You did?
Yeah. Oh. So it,
wow.
The trailer gave me like echoes of the sound of metal and stuff like that, but obviously it's taking it in like a completely different direction, you know, instead of one person losing the ability to hear, it's one person hearing for everybody, which I thought was like an interesting way to do it, where
but it also makes sense within the context of their particular family and being fisherman family. And
she's experiencing things for them and sharing that experience with them in the only way that she knows how to do it and stuff like that. But it puts her in a very awkward situation.
Especially because she's about to graduate high school, it becomes more complicated because, you know, she's becoming her own woman, and she has to make these really hard, difficult adult decisions along with, you know, love and college and her own passions of life and you know, what she wants
you
to can't do within
be,
her
you,
own life.
You can't be, you know, an entire life experience, or at least an entire portion of a life experience for others your entire life. And it's almost like a... It's almost like a metaphor for adulthood, like in a way, in the fact that like as a parent, this is different because it's the child as the parent. But like as a parent, you can't always be that for your child. You can't always guide your child. You can't always, you know, you have to allow them to grow on their own. And they have to go off on their own to do that. You eventually have to just let them experience life for themselves.
Sure.
And there's kind of like a metaphor in that. And I like that aspect of it a lot, because in this, it's very much like a child is the parent, even though she's not the parent. I'm not saying like she pays the bills and stuff like that, but she is
a good part of like the adult in the household in many forms.
In many ways. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And also just, you know, every dynamic, the brother, like that's the thing. Every single actor, every single character had a lot of respect towards it, and they really delivered. And I think the story towards the end can get a little campy sometimes, as far as like, you know, a very polished, feel-good type.
That was,
you know, ending.
That was my big thing, was like There's a fair bit of schmaltz in this movie.
Which I wasn't expecting from
Apple TV. Like, you know,
well,
like Palmer had schmaltz, but it also had a harder edge
for me. It worked for me though. Okay. And maybe because I was a few drinks in, maybe it's because I'm also deaf in my left ear. I don't know. But I was crying like a motherfucker.
Yeah, I mean, I've been experiencing life by as Jay's left ear for most of my life.
Yes.
You know, I've been telling Jay how things sound in the left ear, and I'm like, it's almost like the right, but it's a little different. It's a little different. I always wondered like what listening to music was like, because like there's like certain songs that, like, you know, where like something's going on in the right speaker and then there's a callback on the left speaker and stuff. I'm always like, Jay has no clue what this song sounds like to me, because there's a call and response and he's not hearing it from the left side.
That's true. Yeah.
So this song is always like for example, like there's like Thomas Iannucci song, which plays for our trailer park. On the right speaker, you hear do 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 do, and then on the left speaker, you hear do 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 do. So for you, it just goes do 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 do, and you're like, that's a weird pause. And it's like, oh no, Jay, there's no pause. You just didn't hear what's going on the left side.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. You wouldn't know, because you've never heard from that ear. So
yeah, but it depends on what platform I'm listening to that song on. I think I listen to it through my phone. I don't think I listen to it ear pods.
When I put it on the show, it's actually a mono track, and then I split it into a stereo track. So you're actually getting both. But if I played it as just a stereo track, you would only hear it from left and right. That's the difference between mono and stereo. But anyway, we record, we actually, me and Jay record in mono, so it's easier for me to put the things together. But most of the stuff that I pull and I put in, like our music and stuff like that, that's in stereo. But when I export it, it's all into one mono track. But anyway, that's a little bit, it's a little peek behind the curtain.
Anyway, I loved this.
Also, mono helps me cut out a lot of background noise. So,
sure.
I liked it. I liked the movie. I liked it. It was fine.
This is an A movie for me. Oh, I love this movie. It's one of my favorites of the year.
I'm not that high.
Yeah.
I'm like a B plus. I liked it. Yeah. I liked it. I had a good time with it.
Again,
I'm curious
if I rewatch it, if it's going to hold up the same kind of grade level like I thought it was initially. But
I don't remember what we gave Palmer, but like I didn't.
I went with it pretty.
I didn't enjoy this as much as like Palmer.
I think Palmer. I feel like I gave it a B or B plus.
Yeah, I like Palmer way more than this.
Okay.
I mean, I like The Dog's Way Home probably more than this.
I really love the music teacher. This guy apparently is really, really like well renowned. Just isn't really as famous in the U.S. as he should be, from what I hear. Yeah, Eugenio Derbez, that guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. So, but no, I did enjoy the movie. As far as like going back,
it's worth watching
it again.
We'll say
probably
that.
Not.
So between Dave and Jay, it's worth the watch.
Yeah, for sure.
Go check it
for
out.
Sure. If you have,
you know, especially if you have Apple, it's certainly worth.
It's
watch
another thing.
There's not much content out
it's
there.
It's another thing for Apple TV Plus. That's just like it's another feather in the cap. It's just another reason to get it. And I think me and Jay are both early adopters of it. And yeah, I mean,
and they actually spent a record $25 million from Sundance for this movie as well. So they have the record
and,
now for movies out of Sundance.
And Ted Lasso. I mean, that's the real reason to get it.
The show that keeps on giving.
It just keeps on giving.
They just had the Christmas episode, and oh my God, did it deliver.
It's so good. That show is just so fucking good.
It's too fucking good. It's too
good. Who's your favorite? Who's your favorite character in Ted Lasso?
Oh. Fuck me, there's so many.
Mayan's got to be, he's here, he's there, he's every fucking where. Roy Kent! I fucking love Roy Kent.
Roy Kent, I'm not surprised at all that is your guy.
He literally goes through life as an angry fucking cunt to everybody. And I was like, yep, that is
straight faced.
That is literally how I live, at least my professional life. I am an angry cunt to everybody. And in real life, I'm a pretty nice guy. And so is Roy Kent. So, you know.
No, he is. I do find it amusing. I really, I don't know. I, honestly,
I picture you as a Jamie Tart.
I love Jason.
I picture you as a Jamie Tart. I think in life,
thank you.
You have to fail to find yourself, and that's where Jamie Tart is right now in his life. He's failing to find himself.
He is right now currently.
Yeah,
but I think Ted Lasso himself. I think he's my favorite character because I love. He's good for me. Like I don't know. I need to see characters more like him because it keeps me out of my depression all the time. So
Ted is he's a beacon in an otherwise bleak world. So
he certainly is.
All right, Jay. So another thing that I got down to watching was I watched the Star Wars Bad Batch season finale. So I'm not going to get into Bad Batch too much. I'm not going to like start breaking down Easter eggs. I actually want to do a whole episode on Bad Batch. And I asked Tony from Take Two Podcast to join me for that. So I'm probably going to maybe put together like a panel maybe of people who have watched the entire series to do that. I don't know when we'll do that, but it's kind of like an idea I'm kicking around. I pretty much have to find or make the time to do that and edit it. I might just release it as like a here's a stream of consciousness of us talking about it type thing. But anyway, Bad Batch, it's good. It's good. It's the best visuals that the Star Wars animated stuff has had to date, and that's a big thing for it. But it's also interesting because it's a side of Order 66 and the rise of the Empire that we haven't seen from basically the average soldier's point of view and stuff like that. But as far as like first seasons of series go, this is probably the strongest season one that a Star Wars animated show has had. It's probably the most adult that a Star Wars animated show has had, subject matter wise. However, I think it still suffers a little bit from like that season one, you know, still trying to get its footing. And by season two and three, it might really catch its wheels in the sand that it's been spinning in and really take off. That's what I'm hoping for. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed season one, but it had its stinker episodes. And I think that I think that's true of all Star Wars animated series. I think they all start from a place where they're kind of just trying to find their footing, trying to find their audience, trying to find the story that they're wanting to tell. And then in season two and three, Dave Filoni really will sink in deep. However, this does have a massive Easter egg and lead in to The Mandalorian in the fact that like a major scientist from Kamino is now firmly planted as a slave to the Empire and will be working as a geneticist in the Empire. And when she's taken to the Empire, she is greeted by someone in a white and gray outfit with the Kaminoan cloners symbol on her shoulder. And I was like, oh, we've seen people like that in The Mandalorian. It's very clear what they have in mind for this Kaminoan, a scientist who's been captured and taken to an Imperial facility by the end. So it's also Dave Filoni building upon his Filoni-verse that he's doing for Star Wars and stuff like that. So is it worth the watch? 100%, because if you're a big Star Wars fan, you got to watch it. Sorry, it's just going to be tying into a lot of shit that's going on with Star Wars on Disney Plus moving forward. So there's some reason to watch it there. But also, I do think it has a lot of heart, and I think they're going to build off of the things that happened in this season, leading into more seasons and stuff. And I think that out the gate, this is the strongest animated season one that Star Wars has had. It's just still not quite there yet, but I think they're getting there. But if you're a big Star Wars fan and you haven't been watching Bad Batch, now's the time. It's all out. Go watch all 16 episodes.
Cool, man.
What a fucking chode response that was.
Well, that's all you, brother.
But Jay's going to continue to watch The Mandalorian, and he's going to be confused at moments, and I'm going to have to explain to him that this is a callback to Bad Batch Season 1, Episode 17.
How am I going to get confused? It's going to be literally an Easter egg thing that only you people will pick up on, and me will serve zero purpose within the show that I'm just going to wash over me.
Probably not.
And not care
about.
I get the feeling
like Dave Filoni is going to be pulling no punches coming forward now that he has more creative.
He won't do that.
Now that he has more creative control, I think there's going to be some things where they're going to be start treating Star Wars like the MCU, and you either watch it all or you're going to be missing out on some shit.
Well, I won't watch it then. I don't fuck with animated is like that. I can't do
it. It's so good though, Jay. It's so good.
I can't
it looks
do it.
So pretty.
I can't do it.
Anyway, White Lotus.
I'm just gonna turn it off or fall asleep.
HBO Max comedy about upper class people.
So there's a few different groups of people that come to this tropical island, kind of like a Hawaii type of thing. It's a 7-episode miniseries. Yeah. And it's already got green lit for season two.
I'll be honest,
new characters, new setting.
Dylan from Beard Brothers Podcast,
very excited.
My video game buddy. Yes. He told me not to watch it.
Well, for you, yes, I would say not watch it. Yeah, because it's not for everybody.
However,
it's very soapy. It's very dark humored. C-list ensemble. It's in all its glory.
Just for full disclosure purposes, Dylan also doesn't like Schitt's Creek, which automatically made me be like, are you even a human?
You are pukes. You are the lowest form of life on Earth. You are not even human fucking beings.
But he said he never got past season one. And I was like, oh, yeah, that.
But he watched season one.
Yeah, but I was like,
and he still didn't get
but
through.
But that's rough because, like, no, he never finished season one.
Oh, my God.
I was like, season one is the weakest Schitt's Creek season, however.
Yeah, but
I fell in love with the characters in season one. So, but from what I hear, there's nothing to love
like if he
about
gave
any
up after,
of the characters.
If he gave up
Lotus.
After three episodes, then I can understand.
Three or
like,
four episodes. Yeah, that's about it. Yeah. That's about all he made it.
Yeah.
But from what I hear, unlike Schitt's Creek, White Lotus has no one who you're going to fall in love with. Like, you're going to love to hate them all.
Well, that's my point. You're going to love to hate a lot of different kind of characters because they're all in certain kind of ways tormented, shitty, in their own little ways, very flawed. Some turn to the light, some turn to the dark. It's an evolution, and oh my God. This is a show that literally by episode to episode gets better and better and better the more you get to know these characters, and you realize these actors are just relishing.
You tell me not to watch something, and then you describe it, and I'm like, you're right, I won't like it. But now I want to watch it just so I like it, just to piss you off.
I gotta piss me off.
Show how wrong you are.
But the fact that HBO actually picked up a season two, you know, Mike White is the writer, director, showrunner, whatever. He's the guy behind it, and you know, it's gonna follow different people and a different resort within the world, you know, that the White Lotus owns, you know, and it's. You know, and it's a mystery too, as well. You know, there's like so much shit going on with it. It's so much fun, and I think there is a lot of shit that you're gonna enjoy from it because it is very deadpan at times. Actually, you know what? You should watch
this.
Dark. This is
I like dark humor.
To be honest, the more I think about this, the more I think you will like this.
Listen to Jay thinking like my life's all fucking sunshine and fucking rainbows.
It's a big play between the people that actually work there.
The way you're describing it reminds me of like the new Hulu show, which has like Nicole Kidman and
Melissa
McCarthy.
Nine Perfect Strangers.
Yeah, where like they all kind of like go to like this this boutique like health resort to like be healed and transformed and stuff like that, but they're all like from various forms of life and stuff like that, but there's also like your rich assholes mixed in there and stuff like that. I haven't watched it yet. I kind of meant to watch it, but I'll be honest,
it's not far removed from
Melissa McCarthy's like being in it.
She's in it.
I was like, do I watch this? I'm like, on one hand, I got Nicole Kidman, who, like, as far as, like, TV has gone in recent years, has fucking knocked it out of the park, like, with everything she's done.
True.
And then I got Melissa McCarthy, who everything she's done over the past couple years has really made me go, like, yeah, I don't need any of that. I don't want to watch that. I don't need it. So I'm, like, I'm torn. If I have time, I might watch Nine Perfect Strangers. I don't know.
I am curious. I will say that I am curious about it.
So you're recommending White Lotus for a certain crowd, for the Jay's Indie Corner crowd, but not even so much that.
I think people that actually enjoy some fun, cheeky drama, you know, will enjoy it. Give it a little bit. I mean, it only gets better, like I said, and it's just so much fun. It's just a fun show. It's really worth it, I think. I enjoyed watching it so much, and I'm so happy that it got picked up in season two, just to see. Not that I need to follow these characters anymore, but I think this guy has a really interesting perspective of storytelling.
Okay.
In a mini series type setting within different kind of worlds and resorts and characters. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, before we get into our free guy review, I got one final thing to talk about. It is Disney Plus Marvel What If. So we got the first two episodes now. And I purposely waited until the second episode came out before I started talking about this because I did not like the first episode. I did not like the Peggy Carter Captain America episode. I thought the dialogue was absolutely fucking terrible. You got Bucky running around saying things like, oh, who are you, the Queen of England? And then like he comes running in at one point and goes, oh, who ordered the calamari? And I'm like, when the fuck did Bucky become such a fucking cut up? You know what I mean? Like, but I hated every bit of dialogue that came from Bucky's mouth. But also, like, the first episode did this thing where it's like, we're going to retell Captain America the First Avenger, but instead of, you know, obviously instead of instead of Steve Rogers becoming Captain America, Peggy Carter steps in to the chamber, gets hit with the super soldier serum and the Vita rays, and comes out as the super soldier. And that's all well and good, but what I didn't like was Peggy Carter was exactly like Steve as Captain America, practically. You know, she was this completely, you know, altruistic good doer. And in my mind, I was like, this is the woman who went on to run S.H.I.E.L.D. in the main universe. She is flawed, right? She should have more questionable morals than Steve had. Why didn't we explore that? Why didn't we explore the fact that, like, someone else with the super soldier serum would act differently than Steve acted with it? Why is she completely good and altruistic? I won't spoil the ending, but by the ending, this character is not done in the What If universe. So maybe she might come back and we might get aspects of that and they might develop it a little bit more. But as far as, like, the first episode went, I was completely unimpressed. It's like they tried to cram 2 hours of movie into 32 minutes of television and they were like, there you go, presenting itself. And, like, I was like, if they're all like this, I'm not gonna like it that much.
No, sir, I didn't like it.
I'll enjoy bits of it, because there was, don't get me wrong, there was a montage scene of them fighting Hydra, like, all throughout the World War II front that I thought was great, with Steve in the Iron Man outfit and her, you know, basically jumping on top of planes and hitting pilots with the shield and throwing them out and stuff like that. And I was like, that's a lot of fun. The action bits are a lot of fun. But as far as the story goes, as far as the character goes, you're not wowing me at all. However, episode 2 then came out, which is the one where T'Challa is picked up by the Ravagers and becomes Star-Lord and becomes a space hero and stuff like that. That episode I absolutely fucking loved. Seeing Thanos as, like, a reformed villain, now a hero and part of the Ravagers, fucking awesome. And just seeing T'Challa, like, in that role when his relationship with Yondu was awesome. And the only thing I didn't like was, like, the Collector as, like, this big buff bad guy, and I was like, why is the Collector all big and buff? And it's like, I guess because Thanos was big and intimidating and imposing and he was previously the villain of the galaxy. Now, since the Collector is now the bad guy, I guess he had to get big and buff so that he would be physically intimidating as well. I don't know. But the fact is, I fell in love with Chadwick Boseman as the Star-Lord character. I loved Yondu in it, as I've loved Yondu previously. But I loved Thanos, and I loved the way they made the Ravagers feel like these like this band of heroes, reformed villains, now heroes, all because of just this bright spot in the universe that was brought to them, to the celestial realm, by the Ravagers, which is T'Challa. And it's awesome. It was a really, really good episode. So if, like, I'm scoring, you know, What If now, I'm just like, it's one bad, one good. What we got next? You know, I'm hoping for something that's going to blow me away. And episode 2 of What If kind of blew me away. Episode 1 left me like, ugh, I don't know what to expect from here on out. So it's a mixed bag, really. I think this is going to be very episodic.
But I think that's what it's always going to be. Like, that's what you would expect from
episode by episode. I might not like it.
Yeah, of course. It's going to be all kinds of different perspectives that not everybody's going to like. It's a fucking random mixed bag of possibilities.
I'm just saying
some people are not gonna like
this one. Explored,
some people will love
the second one. Explored some difference about the second episode. Explored some differences in it, in the storyline from Guardians of the Galaxy 1, and it was actually completely different than the storyline of Guardians of the Galaxy 1, to the point where I was like, this is good, I like this. Like, but where Peggy Carter was just so similar to what we got before, I didn't feel like it was much of a what if at all. It was just changing character A for character B and character B for character C, and then, like, who cares? The story practically stayed the same. They just added a monster at the end instead of a giant, you know, explosion or a giant helicopter or plane that's going to take, you know, bombs to New York. They added a giant creature from a different realm. And I was like, okay, I guess to be different, that's why you would do that. Anyway, What If so far, mixed bag for me. Really loving episode two. And like when I'm all done with this, I get the feeling like I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch episodes that I really liked and other episodes. I'm going to be like, never have to watch it again. Don't care. Could care fucking less about it. And yeah, but that might be the formula of the show. You know, it's not meant for, you know, each episode may not be meant for everybody. You know, it may not be as different as you thought. So, Jay, you ready to get into Free Guy?
Let's do it.
Because we're running a little long. But, Jay, let's head over. Let's get into our Free Guy review.
This character in the video game Free City has been turning heads by being the good guy.
We love you, Blue Shirt Guy!
Watch out for the...
They seem nice.
Blue Shirt Guy is the first real artificial intelligence.
Too high!
His whole world's about to end. Don't you think you'd want a chance to save it?
We have to fight for it. We have to fight together.
That actually hurt my hand.
All right, Jay, quick synopsis. Free Guy, directed by Sean Levy and written by Zach Penn. It stars Ryan Reynolds as the titular character of Guy. Guy is an NPC in a massively popular video game, which is clearly based on GTA Online. This video game is called Free City. Guy goes through his day-to-day life doing the exact same shit, drinking the same coffee, going to the same boring job where he does and says the same shit to the same people every day, which literally is what it's like being middle class in the United States. That is, until Guy decides that he wants a change. Guy begins to interact with his world in a whole new way once he meets the character of Molotov Girl. Now, Guy must earn her love, rally his fellow NPCs, and weed out corruption in Free City by being a good guy and showing that the powerless can be powerful with the right motivations. And in this case, that motivation is Molotov Girl's poon. Or her kiss. It's really about a kiss, right? It's less dirty than blowing it down to the hunt for Vajish.
One good looking girl,
yeah,
just to get their attention just, and get fixated
to
on
take
you
it
know?
To take it
just
in the route
like,
that the movie
guy did.
To take it in the route that the movie did. Love at first sight. Exactly.
Which I know all too much about.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to boil it down to, you know, the terrible things. But no, look, man, I liked this movie. I really did. I loved things about it, like little details in the background of like playable characters who are randomly firing guns in the air as like Guy's just going through his normal day, just enjoying his coffee. And there's like this playable character in the background, just like shooting a helicopter down and explosions going on behind Guy. And he's just like walking. And I'm like, that's funny. It's, you know, it's a funny look at things about like how we ignore, you know, the true pandemonium that's going on in our own world as we go through like our daily lives. And there's like even like this like really funny thing where like Guy is like at an ATM and he's checking his balance, and in the background you see like someone like running against a wall and then just jumping in the air and then running against the wall again, jumping in the air. And it's like, if you ever played an MMORPG, like you see people doing that in the background all the time. If you've ever played Assassin's Creed, you've done that yourself. It's also just like an interesting world that's been built. I like this idea that like the entire crux of the story is the fact that like it's stolen technology and stuff. Like, it reminded me a lot of like Silicon Valley, right? Where like they get in like deep about like how this is technically intellectual property is owned by this company because it was developed by so and so at this time and stuff like that, which I thought was interesting. It's like an interesting real world way to like really ground what's going on in this movie with our real world.
I really enjoyed the fact that this was just a easy, breezy, fun movie.
Definitely was.
That literally your brain did not get distracted at any given moment. You were hook, line, and sinker in this movie through in, throughout. And I really appreciated the fact that you had no time to pause from that, and it was always an enjoyable experience. Now, again, there was a ton of Easter eggs that obviously this is more inclined to Dave's world, but that I realized
I got
that
a
was
list.
Probably
I got
out
a
there
list
that
for
I did
our spoiler
not
section. Yeah.
that I did not probably notice so much of, but I appreciated the fact that, like, you know, it was very well aware of itself, very improv driven. I definitely had so much fun with this movie. I mean, you know, and it kind of rose to the occasion. I thought, you know, some jokes landed a little flat, but nothing was terrible, you know?
No, a lot of stuff
really sank.
Ryan Reynolds has the ability to be perfectly comedic timing. Like, that's just what Ryan Reynolds does. It's just
I think he understands the tone of each movie that he's going for as much as possible. And I think the big MVP of this movie is Sean Levy. Sean Levy, the director, was by far, to me, the MVP of this whole movie. I think he did a fantastic job visually, special effects-wise, driving the narrative along, keeping everything reeled in as much as possible.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's just all
over the
place.
There's also this great underlying thing that's going on where it's like, it's really about being woke, right? That's what this movie's about. This movie's about being woke. It's about
ultimately.
It's about looking at the world around you and making a positive change in it, right? And it really is at its heart about one person making a difference, you know. And the best part is, like, Guy's not just changing one world; he changes two worlds. He changes his own, and he changes the real world as well by doing what he does, by going out there and becoming a good guy. He becomes a beacon. He becomes inspiring. I also really love the villain of Antoine, like, played by Taika Waititi. Like, Antoine represents everything that's wrong.
I had a love-hate relationship with him.
He represents everything that's
sometimes
wrong.
Sometimes I felt a little too forced.
But don't get me wrong. In the tech world, in tech culture, there are people exactly like Antoine.
Sequels and IP, bro. Sequels are way better than originals. Who's the best martial artist in the whole wide world? Steven Seagal.
He is obvious.
Oh, I know.
He is
know.
Obviously, like, you know, an amalgam of multiple
very
different personalities.
Very like Kanye West inspired.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, he like, but there
forward thinking. Yeah.
There are, you know, he's definitely like an allegory for someone like that, like Kanye West. But, like, really, it's amped to 11 just for the purposes of the movie. But.
Sure.
There are crazy, insane bastards like that in the tech industry. And I love the way, like, this movie, like, it takes video games in a realm where it's like people become emotionally attached to these things, right? Like, that's a real world thing. I remember playing Mass Effect and being like, no, Liara's bae. Like, I shipped Liara in Mass Effect 1. She wasn't in Mass Effect 2, so I shipped nobody else in Mass Effect 2. So that by the time I got her back in Mass Effect 3, I could be like, what's up, bae? Nah, I ain't been with nobody else. I've been waiting for you. Like, you become emotionally attached to, like, characters in video games. And so it's a very real thing. And this was actually perfectly encapsulated by the fact that, like, you know, Molotov Girl has her first kiss, spoilers, with Guy. And as she does it, there's literally an N7 sticker on her laptop that she's playing the game on. And N7 is a symbol from Mass Effect. So I kind of like, I was like, is that a reference to the fact that we just had, like, an emotional moment in a video game that involved, like, two characters falling in love, and then we immediately show a Mass Effect sticker, which
I would expect,
has romantic subplots in it. I was like, yeah, because we do get emotionally attached to our video games. But I also like the fact that, kind of like, this plot, even through its comedy and its silliness, it's kind of a deconstruction of the theory of we're all living life as a simulation, which, you know, very smart people in this world very much believe. Elon Musk believes that we are living a simulation, that we very well could be a simulation created by a higher race, or we could all be a video game character. We could all be that NPC who is waking up in the morning, drinking the same shitty coffee every day, going to the same shitty job. It really is an allegory for being middle class in this world, for just, you know, going through life and doing the same shit every day and expecting different results, but we don't. And the cameos in this fucking movie were Channing Tatum.
So good.
The boy ain't done nothing in years. But, like, at the same time, seeing him, I went like, It don't matter. He's just so good.
I missed him. I actually missed him on screen.
He's just so good at these cameos, man.
He played up the role perfectly.
Yeah.
Perfectly. You could not have casted a better cameo than that.
No, absolutely not.
In that kind of role, yeah.
So, I mean, there was a lot to love in this movie. I thought its comedy was well done. It was perfectly timed and everything like that. I thought that, you know, the world building worked really well. It made me feel like this is something that could be true to life. And by the time we got to the end, it's schmaltzy as hell. But then again, this is a PG-13 movie that was developed by 20th Century Fox and ultimately bought by Disney midway through its production and became a Disney movie, essentially. That it's I think maybe it might have been better off for it. I watched this movie and I went like, man, I wish they went a little bit darker. I wish they could have put a harder edge on this movie. I wish they could have gone deeper into some of these concepts and stuff like that. And then I realized, like, sure, they could have done that and it would have been rated R and it wouldn't have reached the audience that it reached.
It's not the movie.
And it wouldn't have made the money
that
it made. Like,
it's not the summer movie that they were trying to do.
No. Now, Jay, what else did you like about this movie before we get into some of the cons?
I think ultimately, you know, the characters and the actors, I think, were really just on point and on page with each other. And I think, obviously, our main vixen herself, Jodie Comer, big, young, rising star in Hollywood, I think she was fantastic as well.
Did I? Yeah.
And Joe Keery from Stranger Things. I think he
Babysitter
had
Steve was fucking awesome in it.
Yeah, and our boy Yukarish and Bukhar, they both had phenomenal roles that were a lot larger than I think a lot of people initially realized in promotion in this movie. So they were fantastic. They were really good.
Is it possible for someone to go more over the top than Ryan Reynolds? And the answer is yes. It's Taika Waititi. He's really good at going over the top and playing this type of character. I wouldn't be surprised if most of what Taika Waititi did was ad lib, because we know he's so good at that with things like, you know, Into the Shadows and stuff like that, and Hunt for the Water People and stuff. Like, I feel like most of the comedy that he put forward here was just from himself. Just period. Like, I'm not sure if they had a script for Taika Waititi, and if they did, whether it was completely ignored, maybe it was followed to an extent, but like, they just kind of he's just that guy that, like, just let him go and see what comes back to you. And I think him as the villain really worked really well. But for some of my cons, Jay, some of it may seem a little nitpicky, but I'll just get started with the first one I had on my list, where some aspects of this world don't make sense. Like, there's a playable character, Molotov Girl, who sits on top of guy's lap and goes, "Oh my God, is that a gun in your pocket?" And he says, it is. And she reaches in and grabs it and pulls it out. And I was like, well, wait a minute. She's not wearing a haptic suit. So how are you, mouse and keyboard, feeling that there's a gun in his pocket? Not quite sure. Also, like, the whole idea that, like, you take the glasses off of the playable character and then you can put them on and become a playable character. I was like, but what glasses? That makes sense if this was like a VR world, but this isn't a VR world. People are playing this with mouse and keyboard. So doesn't make sense, but plot convenience. Moving on. This movie felt like it was written by somebody who had researched video games but never really played them themselves. There's like a lot of times where they're just like, oh, just reboot it and like everything will go back to normal. And it's like, well, no, because there's save data. Like, that's fucking stupid. That doesn't make sense. Like there's a point in the movie where they decide just to like reset the servers and it'll erase everything. And it's like, but if I have save data, that's not on your servers. That's on my hard drive. So, like, you can't. If one character gives me, let's say, a video that has damning evidence of something that I need for my legal case in the game, and I save it, it's on my save data on my hard drive, not on your server. At least the way I know it. Also, isn't it a little cliched for the main character to be kissed and then just like wake up and be like, oh, I remember everything. and there is a villain in this movie who has Ryan Reynolds' face. If you watch the most latest trailers before this movie came out, that was spoiled for you. But that deep fake Ryan Reynolds' face on top of a big buff body.
I lift things up and put them down.
Excuse me?
I lift things up and put them down.
Did not look right. That, like, Disney just hired a guy who was really good at doing deep fake videos so that he can continue putting Mark Hamill's face on other people's bodies because he was so good at it that it was so seamless. To be like, there's an amateur out there, quote unquote amateur, who was that good, and then you put out a major Hollywood production that has Ryan Reynolds' face deep faked on top of this guy's body and it looked awful, just went like, you just didn't hire the right people to do it. And then my big problem is, like, towards the end of this movie, there's a lot of sacrifice, right? Like, Guy has to sacrifice a lot to get his ultimate goal in the end of freeing Free City from the clutches of this evil organization, and ultimately saving himself and the rest of his NPCs, you know. And at the end, he gets it all back. It all just comes back to him. And that really bothered me, because it makes you feel like that you can achieve great heights but not sacrifice anything to do it. And it's like, that's not it. If we're trying to make this fake world, you know, as important as the real world, then that means that real world consequences have long lasting effects. And for it to just all go back and just have this big schmaltzy ending where it's like nothing has any permanence. It's just like, ah, damn. You almost had me, movie, but then you did that. So, Jay, any other cons for you?
I think ultimately it was one of those things where it's just more of like some like script stuff as far as dialogue. You know, some stuff worked, some stuff didn't. You're right. The Ryan Reynolds S kind of character later on in the film could have been done better.
It just doesn't look good. And like I said, if there's someone out there who's like, a quote unquote amateur at this, and they do it better than quote unquote professionals do, then that why are we doing it?
I feel like it's Ryan Reynolds in makeup.
It's not.
You looked into it? Okay.
Nope. That is an actual bodybuilder's body and Ryan Reynolds' face superimposed, deep faked on top of it. Now, it works for the context of the movie and the fact that it was rushed and put together.
It's a video game world. Yeah, you can get away with bullshit, weird looking stuff like that. But I think ultimately the number one thing about this movie is that it's so much fun. I've had more fun with this movie, I think, than 99% of other movies this whole year, for better or worse. I don't care. It's just one of those things where, like, even though I'm not a gamer, even though this is not normally my cup of tea, I just simply was an easy watch. I had a fun time with it. It was a good time.
I think that's to the movie's credit. I think, like, maybe non-gamers might like this movie more than, like, gamers do. Like, I think this is, like, this is what, you know, mass media thinks of video games put on screen versus what it really is.
Right. Maybe it's because I'm not a gamer. Yeah.
Versus like what games really are to people who play them. You know what I mean? Like,
sure. That's a very good point. That's a whole different conversation that.
And I'm a gamer, so.
You could have with somebody else.
But I'm a gamer, so I look at this and I went like, this is what you think. This is what you think gamers are. This is what you think about gamers, and this is what you think video games are. And it's really not that. But you know, it's okay for popular media to think that, because the whole point of being a gamer is the fact that, like, I do feel like I'm on the outside, you know, experiencing something that maybe not a lot of other people are. So it's fine. It's fine. You know, I know, like, we did this in a very very mundane fashion where it's like pros and cons and stuff like that. But really, that was just my way of breaking it down.
Yeah, but it's it's one of those harder films to break down.
No, it is, but I'm doing it this way so that I can get
into, also without
spoiling, I can get to our spoilers and stuff like that. Ultimately, what I thought about Free Guy was, like, I didn't think it was original. However, I thought that it was done in a way that was extremely enjoyable to a mass audience, and I'm part of mass audience, and I did enjoy it. And I really thought that, you know, what it did right was the little things. You know, there was little things that really made me appreciate the, you know, to the length that they would go to. And I think that, like, everyone was perfectly cast in it. I think that it was that, you know, I thought that Ryan Reynolds does his best Ryan Reynolds here. You know, he's just being Ryan Reynolds. And, you know, I thought that the supporting cast was great. I thought the villain was great. All fucking Taika Waititi. I laughed a lot while watching this movie, and I know that that's what this movie was out to make me do. I did think that there was a deeper story going on here that they were just too afraid to go towards because they wanted to make sure that they kept this mass audience appeal to it and ended on a note where everybody could just go yay and leave the theater and feel really good about everything. And that's what this movie set out to do, and it did it great. However, that's not me. That's not my sensibilities. That's not what I like as somebody. I would have liked them to take maybe a deeper turn here or there. I do think that the plot is somewhat derivative of something else that Zach Penn had penned himself. So, and we'll get into that. If you don't know, Zach Penn was the writer, the screenwriter behind Ready Player One. And I'll start our spoilers by going through how similar to Ready Player One this movie was. But given it a score, man, I'm at a B plus. I'm going to say B plus. I had a really fun with this movie. I had a lot of fun with it.
Really? Yeah. I'm a B plus as well, actually, oh, okay. To be honest.
See, you seem like you were so much more on it. But, like, because you had...
Well, I am.
Full disclosure. I have a text message where you had a higher score for this movie. So.
No, I had an A minus. I originally had an A minus when I came out of the theater, and I sat with it, and it dropped down to a B plus. Mainly because I think it's just not going to hold up in rewatchability.
I think it does. Actually, I think this is the type of movie
there's just not enough weight behind it for me.
So to me, one of the first things that when I was watching it, I was just like, okay, so Lego Movie. Right,
and the humor perhaps won't hold
up either. This movie reminded me, first off, the first thing it reminded me of before I even got into the Ready Player One thing was I was like, it's Lego Movie, right? Like, Lego Movie follows, you know, Chris Pratt's character just waking up in the world and getting introduced to it and stuff like that, and he's going through doing his mundane job, and he's just like, I can be so much more. I can do so much more. And I was like, okay, that's what Free Guy is. Lego Movie and Free Guy. They're both, like, the same shit, right? And then I started drawing parallels to another movie, and I was like, oh, this ain't original at all, but it's still fun. You know what I mean? Like, it's still fun. It's still well made. So, like, you know.
Extremely well made.
And I think I was originally at a B, if I remember right. But, like,
I thought it was B minus.
No, I think I was at a B. But, like, what raised it a little bit to a B plus was the fact that I was like, at least it's a new property. It's a new IP. At least it's something different.
It's a new original idea. Yeah.
It's not a sequel to something. It doesn't exist in something else's universe. And I was like, I think things deserve a little bit of credit for being that, at least in today's day and age. And you call me out for that if you will. But I think I do think that deserves something. So Jay, without any further delay, man, let's get into some of our spoilers.
Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning.
All right, so I want to start spoilers off, Jay.
Let me start off. Spoiler alert. I'm really pissed off that you and I grade a lot of current movies very similar nowadays.
So am I, but also that we
talk. I really realized
that.
We talk
about them differently.
Motherfucker.
Like, my review was mostly negative on it, but your review was like mostly positive, and we still came out with the same score. Where it's like,
well, because you're able to break down the negatives because you're a gamer, I think, a little bit more. But at the same time, I think you also do appreciate the fact of my perspective where the positives of this movie. And that's mainly what I get from it. And for me, the negatives are mainly just the fact that I could tell, it's not necessarily my kind of movie. I think the longevity of it all, and I think the repeat viewing and comedy may not hold up.
I'll be honest.
As strong
this
as
movie
I think.
Is so generic. Like, it's this movie's just generic.
Right.
And it's approach
and
to part everything.
Of it. And I think mainly
they wanted to make sure that this movie was for everybody. Everybody could pick this up. This is a movie I could show my mom, and she'd be like, that was a lot of fun. You know what I mean? You know, like,
yeah. My all factor was the execution.
Right. And my daughter would watch this and love it too.
Like, impressive to me.
Like, and you're talking about like an age difference of like 6 to 60, where like this is the perfect Hollywood PG-13 generic movie where it's like everybody can pick this up and watch it. And it's like, it's tough for me to poke holes in that because it's like, yeah, it may not agree with my sensibilities, but it's still well made. So I can't knock it too much because they did a good job. They did a good job at being generic, which is, again, what being middle class is all about. Just be a good job at being generic. But I was drawing similarities to this movie between Free Guy and Ready Player One, and also like a Lego movie. But at least Free Guy and Ready Player One were both written by Zach Penn. The screenplays were. So here's just a quick rundown of some of the things that I found that were very similar. Now, some of these are obvious, like both take place in a video game world. Duh. But both protagonists set off on a journey after they meet a girl. Both are about taking down douchebags that are part of an evil corporate entity who are destroying a video game world. Both protagonists rally the disenfranchised masses of their video game world, gamers rising up to fight for social justice. Both use weapons from pop culture in their fights. Both have a fight scene where the female protagonist and the male lead fight off bad guys while spinning in a circle and firing guns. However, this one had a completely different tone than Ready Player One. I will say that. But there is that moment in like Ready Player One where they're at the dance and stuff like that. And she's asking him, are you wearing a haptic suit? And she's touching him all over. And then the bad guys show up and they both immediately like lock their legs and twirl in a circle and start firing guns at bad guys. This had that same scene in the warehouse where like she's on top of a motorcycle and she's like feeling him and she's like, is that a Glock in your pocket? And he goes, well, yeah, it is. And she pulls it out and then he spins the motorcycle in circles and she's firing at all the bad guys. Right. And I was like, oh, that is literally the same action set piece practically that you did in Ready Player One. There you go, Zach Penn. However, to be fair, he's working with a similar medium and a similar type thing. However, I did text you and I felt like this was Ready Player One fan fiction turned into a script. Like, this might have been an early draft of Ready Player One for Zach Penn.
I mean, in some ways, I do understand where you're coming from.
He might have swapped Wade Watts out for an NPC, like Guy, and that's it. Like, what if Wade Watts was an NPC instead of a real-world character? What if Parsifal was the
NPC?
But
it's such a world that I feel like, you know, you couldn't really quite say that without a doubt.
No! I'm pretty sure it's written by the same guy. I'm pretty sure, like, he was just like, it worked once. Let's make it work again.
Yeah, but it's a world. You know, like, you know, worlds are going to be very similar to each other in that kind of way.
I'm just saying.
And I think
there's similarities. There's similarities.
No, there is. Yeah, that's fine. But that's fine. I mean, because, again, in my mind, you know, there are a ton of similarities, but they're completely different movies.
All right, Jay, let's run through some
of
these.
So he gets away with it.
Let's run through some of these Easter eggs real quick. So Easter eggs. When Guy is fighting Dude, who is the Nega version of Guy, he's the big buff version. Also, I really like the little touch of, since Guy was known as Blue Shirt Guy around the world, that Dude had a tattoo of a blue shirt on his on his chest. I did like that.
That was fun.
However, throughout the movie, we see Guy employ the use of weapons such as the portal gun from Portal, the anti-gravity gun from Half-Life 2, the Rainbow Smash Axe from Fortnite, the Mega Buster from Mega Man, and the world is littered with Scorpion tanks from Halo. He also uses Cap's shield, Hulk's fist, and, of course, because Disney purchased Fox during the middle of this, they were able to pull out a lightsaber. Why not? And I love the pop the lightsaber got from the audience. And I don't mean the audience I was watching it with.
Yeah.
From the people at home
For me, it was the Cap shield moment.
There's also another thing that's similar to Ready Player One. It's this fight for this video game world that's happening in real time, but it's being streamed across the world where real life people are watching it all go down and rooting for our protagonist, just like they were in Ready Player One. So just saying, third act is very, very Ready Player One. But all that stuff gets employed. And that's one of the things that I really liked about the movie, is just the way that it's able to like tap in to the culture that it's trying to draw in. Like, I say this is for a general audience, but like, a general audience isn't loving that shit the same way I'm loving that shit. They're watching this and they're just like, okay, I guess that's a thing that could happen. But like, when he pulls out Cap's shield, now we're back to general audience. That's where like everybody's like, I get that reference, right? it's like the Avengers. I understand.
But not
I
even that they even had the fucking music.
Oh. They did. And then also, a lot of people were wondering. There's tons of.
I think I welled up when that fucking happened.
Did you really? when it played the first Avenger score? That's awesome. All right.
Of course.
Everyone was wondering all the cameos in the movie. Like we know that Chris Evans was in it, and we'll talk about his cameo in a little bit. But people were wondering, well, wait, Hugh Jackman's big friends with Ryan Reynolds. Who was he in this movie? Channing Tatum was a cameo. Who's Hugh Jackman? Hugh Jackman was the masked guy in the very beginning of the movie who gives Molotov Girl the map. He's masked.
Of course.
He doesn't show himself. So shortly after Guy dons the sunglasses, over his shoulder, you can see a power-up on the floor that says blatant product placement, and it's in the shape of a liquor bottle, which is clearly a nod to Ryan Reynolds' own gin company, Aviation Gin.
Naturally.
The fictional city of Free City is based on Grand Theft Auto's Liberty City. However, it was not filmed in New York like Liberty City was based on. It was filmed in Boston. There's multiple Deadpool posters and action figures that you can see in the background. And finally, Ryan Reynolds realized that Chris Evans was in town while filming in Boston, called him up and said, would you like to do a cameo in this movie? And he said, absolutely, if you can get me out of there, in and out of there in 10 minutes. So the whole crew got together. They had everything set up. They were ready to go. Chris Evans was just going to pop in, do his line, pop out under 10 minutes. And Ryan Reynolds got it done in 7. and
boom.
Chris Evans is playing. He was filming Defending Jacob at the time. And he's literally the guy who watches Guy pull out the Captain America shield, block dude's, you know, final blow to him, and he goes, oh shit, which is one of the few curse words in the movie. All that stuff geeked me out. So it definitely elevates my score when I see stuff like that. I think the ending, like there's a lot of plot points in this movie that were very telegraphed. I knew where this movie was going, right? Like, I heard her get off the laptop and say, like, she's actually working on a court case, right? She's suing these people, right? And then we see the IGN interview with her and Joe Keery, and they're talking about their game, like, you know, life itself and stuff like that. And I was like, cool. So she's suing this big corporation, and she was developing a game with them. This big corporation bought their game and then used its engine to build this game, Free City, which means that if their NPCs were supposed to work like AI and gain true experience and develop and evolve based on that, that means that Guy has that code stored in him, which would then make him evolve and grow as the movie goes along. And eventually he will become the proof that their game exists inside this game, which means that they are owed, you know, back pays and royalties, and they would win their court case. And I was like, I figured that all out right after that IGN interview when they talked about that stuff. I was like, all right, I know where this movie's going. I get it. I got it. Done.
Check out the big brain on Brad. You're a smart motherfucker. That's right.
I didn't get all the nits. I didn't get all the nooks and crannies, all the, you know, all the kibbles and bits. I didn't get them all in there, but I figured the movie out. I was done.
Oh, good for you.
It was very telegraphed, and I was like, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Like I said, general audience movie. We're not trying to blow minds. We're not trying to overly impress, but we're just really trying to fucking entertain the shit out of people. And they did that.
In spades.
Anything else spoilery that you would like to discuss about Free Guy?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, it was one of those things that, no, I'm good. I think
how about the ending? Joe Keery getting the girl, right? And Guy getting his best friend who sacrificed himself for him back, and him and Dude are now also best friends, and we're getting a sequel to this movie, and I'm just like, what's the conflict for the sequel?
The whole point is he is Joe Keery's character. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, you know, he had to get the girl because Joe Keery is guy, you know, in real form. So it's kind of the whole point.
I guess.
He is essentially the main, he's actually the lead actor of this whole movie, technically.
Yeah, and you know what? He did a fantastic job. I still really enjoyed Joe Keery. I can't wait for season 4 of Stranger Things because Joe Keery did an interview where people asked whether we'll get more of Babysitter Steve and Dusty's relationship, and he said, oh, season 4 is very heavily Steve and Dusty based. Like, they are essentially the main characters. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
they know how to milk
they
it.
They know how to milk it, for sure. You know, look, Free Guy, like I said, it's already, Disney's already said it's going to be getting a sequel. I don't think I like this movie enough to be like, man, I really want a sequel. I want to see where I go with this. I don't care.
No, I agree with that. I really don't either, because this is not, honestly, okay, so before I saw, even when I saw the trailer, I did not care about this movie whatsoever.
No, I think we both. So I think that's the thing that surprised me the most was the fact that, like, I didn't give a flying fuck about this movie. I didn't want to see this movie, really. I thought this movie was going to be garbage. Honestly, early buzz and you telling me about, I never read any early buzz, but you telling me it was getting good early buzz is what made me go out there and see this movie.
Yeah. No, but without a doubt, I could have easily.
It's also not killing it in the box office right now. So, but nothing is right now. So it's not a fault of Free Guy that it's not killing it in the box office right now. It's just, that's just where we are. You know, it grossed, you know, $37.5 million so far. And its opening weekend, it only got just under $30 million, $28 million in the U.S. Its worldwide gross is just under $60 million. So, like I said, it's not killing it. It's not killing it.
Yeah, and again,
but in a healthier market, this is a good buzz movie that'll get people into the theaters multiple weekends to boost this movie's numbers. This and the Suicide Squad,
and I'm seeing it a second time, so I'll be helping that gross in theaters. So, like, I don't know. I mean, I think it's you know, it's one of those classic, like, new science fiction-y kind of, like, action fun comic movies. Not comic, but, like, video game movie type aspired things.
That's Jay's new genre. It's science fiction-y, comic booky, video game-esque comedy.
it's not a natural world type movie.
Fair enough. But I
had a lot of fun with
honestly,
it. I think we've talked about
Free Guy a little bit too much. I think we've given it too much credit.
I think so.
I actually want to go back and rescore it now. But now B+ is where I stand because its general audience nature was just the right amount where it hit just the right amount of depth. But you know, it was very shallow, but it hit just the right amount of depth for it to be worth the checkout. I mean, you know, obviously I don't think people should see this in the theaters though. I'll be honest. I don't think this is a theater movie. I don't think you need to run out there and go see this in the theaters. I think you can wait for a streaming service for this.
I don't think you need to, but I think if you had the option, go see it in theaters.
Yeah, I mean, versus whatever else is out there now. If you've already seen the rest of the stuff, go see it for sure. But if you were on the fence about it and you're like, I don't think this movie's worth the risk, you're right. It's not. It's not. It's fine. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. And
You can't stream it anywhere. No. So I do think you should go to the theaters and see it.
No, you can't.
I do.
Fair enough. That's where you and I differ. All right.
I do. I think so. I'm a big believer in that.
So that's going to do it for Super Movie Bros this week. Remember that if you want to share another movie fact with us, you can reach out to us on our email. That's supermoviebrospodcast@gmail.com. Or you can hit us up on the hotline, which is what I'd prefer to do, so I can play your voicemails. And that is 267-590-9042. You don't just have to leave us facts. You can just shoot the shit, tell us whatever you want us to hear, and we will play it on the show. You can also respond to us on our social media. You can respond to me on Twitter at supermoviepod, or on my Instagram, smbdave, on there. Jay, where can people find you?
Yep, you can reach me on Instagram, Super Movie Bros, and on Twitter, J_SMB.
And of course, we are part of a network. We are part of the Age of Radio Podcasting Network. So make sure you head over to ageofradio.org. There you can check out all the great shows that are part of the Age of Radio Podcasting Network, as well as check out the Super Movie Bros page, where you'll get a handy dandy little media player that'll allow you to binge all Super Movie Bros episodes. You just hit play on one, it'll play through all of them. And then, of course, if you want to catch some of our pre-roll content, catch some of that discussions that me and Jay are kind of like alluding to here on the show, but not really getting into, head over to patreon.com/supermoviebros. Podcast. There you can check out all the stuff that's available for just as little as $1 a month. And we're still looking for reviews. So that's Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. I honestly don't like the Apple Podcast app anymore. I think that they've made podcasts much harder to follow and find. And when you subscribe to them, it's just a mess. I've actually been using Spotify recently for my podcast, but hey, that's just me. If you're using Apple Podcasts and you haven't left us a review, write us a review. We'll read it on the show. I want to thank all of you guys for listening. Have a great one.
Cheers.
Cheers. Also, did you see that guy's dick?
No, it's like a porcelain, white, fucking hairless cat thing.
Well, I mean, I trim mine. Hold on, I trim mine.
Yeah, but you zoom in on that thing, there is not even a scrape of like...
No, Jay, I didn't zoom in on it. Jay, I didn't fucking zoom in on this.
He must be a blonde. That's all I got to say.
I didn't zoom in on this random fucking cock shot that I got. But I got to tell you, I was not happy when I got that. I was like, ugh. I didn't ask for this. And then that's immediately when I was like...
So you felt like a girl. You understand what girls feel like, though. I mean, it's definitely not my dick, but like it's one of those things
where...
Jay,
I know it's not your dick. I've seen
you're like,
your
Lauren,
dick.
Is this Jay's dick?
No, I was like, I know it's not your dick because I've seen your dick through little gold shorts that you wore to fucking Broken Gawa, and
there's no way you can see my dick in that fucking shorts.
I got a gauge for size, buddy. I got a gauge for size.
First of all, all right. Two things. Those shorts had zero flexibility, so it was like smashed on her.
I've also seen you in speedos. I've also seen you in bike shorts. There's nothing below your waist to impress.
It's the same thing. Actually, maybe there's three things. Three.
Jim, calm down. I'm not saying you're small.
I'm a grower, not a shower.
Are you trying to make me think you have a big dick? And, does it matter three, if your friend, like, I three. Don't care if you have a big dick or not. It doesn't matter to me.
And three, I will be the first one to admit, I do not have large balls. Like, they're just, there. They don't hang.
Jay, no one cares about the size of your dick. Most women don't even care about the size of your dick. They care that it works and that you use it well. And that's it.
I know. But
I've just seen your bulge. It doesn't impress anybody.
I know.
So that dick pic that we got in our
email, I'm aware.
I knew that it wasn't you because
that dick pic is hard.
Because that was impressive and yours isn't.
Yeah, but this isn't like a normal dick. This is hard dick. This isn't like soft dick, like bulge dick. This is hard dick.
Oh shit.
This is what I get frustrated with. Like people like get all hyped up on like growers and showers. Like look,
who are
showers,
you trying to impress? Showers, best part is
showers
this is
are
not
bulge
going
people.
Out to people.
Showers
this is
are bulge
and
people.
It's just
and growers
and
are
it's just me and you. No, this isn't going
it doesn't
out to
matter.
People.
It doesn't
this
matter. I have to prove my point.
Why do you care what I think of your dick? I'm never gonna touch it. I'm never going to suck it. I'm never going to be in the presence of it while it's hard. I don't care.
You don't know. We might be locked in a jail cell together and we'll be desperate. I don't know. But no, the point is growers have probably weaker bulges than the showers. The showers have the better bulges. This guy's dick is obviously hard, so it's misleading. Don't be misled, David. This is a hard dick. It's not soft.
Jay, this conversation is misleading. I think you care way too much about what I think of your dick.
I don't. All right, I'm just making a point.